Welcome back to Rising Giants with Max and Dom. Today on the podcast, we have Jasmine Heimel, the incubation lead at the Women in Tech Network. WTN is one of the few incubation programs in the country fully dedicated to advancing women's entrepreneurship. Jasmine is intent upon making a big difference in the entrepreneurial community in Cambodia, driving forward the case for women tech entrepreneurship, acting as a mentor, mediator, and confidant to some of the most talented up-and-coming women entrepreneurs in the country. We hope you really enjoy this episode. And please check out our Rising Giants newsletter on Substack. So Jasmine, thank you so much for coming on Rising Giants today. Really appreciate you being here. Our first question that we'd like to ask our guests is talk us through how you got to where you are today.
Thanks, Max. I'm glad I could be here. It was a long time coming. This is like our third scheduled meeting. I'm Cambodian and Canadian, and I grew up all around Southeast Asia because of my father's job. So it was natural that when I graduated from university in Canada, I came back, and I didn't know what I was coming back for. I ended up being a journalist for a year, and that kind of gave me a crash course of everything I'd missed out on while I was at school. And from the journalism thing, I fell into the incubation space, and I've loved it, so I've stayed ever since.
Okay, great. And talk to us a little bit how, when you were growing up, the Cambodia that you experienced has changed to, you know, coming back a few years ago and getting involved in incubation.
So when you say changed, like which part? Because everything completely changed.
Yeah, I mean, economic, social, like all aspects.
I mean, Cambodia growing up was, it wasn't basic. I would describe it more as community level, and that's definitely stayed till today. And I think you guys can both agree that, you know, being in Phnom Penh, it's like a small village almost, even though it's a big city. And that's something that I really missed and something that I felt the second I came back home. But what was disheartening for me was seeing my family members who weren't given the same opportunities as me. And I could see the struggles that they've been facing because they are in entrepreneurship. Most of my aunts and most of my cousins ended up opening their own businesses just because finding a job didn't allow them to have the flexibility they needed for their families. And just the struggle in opening a business and the struggle in finding a job just made it so much blatantly clear that we're definitely not where we need to be right now. And there's so much work to be done. And it's partly a huge reason as to why I came back. Not the reason that I think I can fix it all, but at least there's an extra person trying, you know?
Yeah, okay. And just out of curiosity, just on the work front in general, how was it adjusting to working in Cambodia versus maybe some of the other places that you've had work experience in? What's the work culture been like for you?
Honestly, I found the work culture in Cambodia to be immensely more positive than that in the West. When I came here, a lot of my workplaces had a very like welcoming and nurturing work culture around it. A lot of the times when you're in Cambodia and you're younger, you listen to your elders and such like that. It's just a social norm. But I found that in the workplace, I was lucky enough to encounter a lot of people who did become my mentors. And it was very important for me to meet older Cambodians who were in the career trajectory that I wanted to enter and had the experience and were able to pass on advice to me.
Great. That leads us on to our next question. So touching on the mentors topic, like what are some of the mentors that you've very much learned from in your career so far?
That's a good question. I would definitely say one of the biggest impacts for me has been my uncles and my aunts. I grew up in a majority Khmer woman household, and from a very young age, I could see that everyone was having to hustle and it was just a fact of life. But it was the resilience and it was the discipline that I think was something that translated a lot to me. And it's traits that I value very highly because I do believe that they've aided me to get to where I am today, even though it's not that far.
Okay, and did any of them in particular encourage you to go down this entrepreneurship incubation path that you find yourself on now, whereby you've helped run one of the leading incubation programs in the country?
Funny enough, I don't think entrepreneurship was in the cards, because having a father that did open his own tech company in Cambodia and suffered a lot with it due to cash flow and many other issues, the idea of entrepreneurship was something that scared my family. And it's something that scares a lot of Khmer families. So I was encouraged to go and work with an organization where I would have a predictable cash flow and a salary, which is what I'm doing. But the idea of taking the leap into entrepreneurship is definitely in the plans, but you know, it's going to take some warming up with them.
Okay, understood. And working in the incubation space in Cambodia, how has that been for you? How are you enjoying being involved in that particular sector?
I think it's very infectious when you see a bunch of young people chasing dreams and really going at things that they've taught themselves and that they've learned on the go. So I definitely think that I've learned so much from watching all these entrepreneurs go on their journeys in so many different sectors, and you guys probably feel the same way. It's definitely an infectious feeling, and I keep saying that because it makes me want to go down a similar path, and I think that's most people who are in the incubation space.
And some of the participants in the space, how do you sort of frame it yourself, and how do you fit within that?
Well, I'm definitely in the ESO part of the ecosystem, but you know, right now there's, I think, roughly 11 accelerators or incubators in Cambodia, and I think it's on the rise. There's new incubation programs every year, and there's new incubators that keep popping up. So we're definitely in the entrepreneurial support organization part of it. And to be honest, a lot of us don't connect much with the other parts of the ecosystem, but we're probably going to touch on that later in this.
Yeah, and I wanted to build upon what you were saying about how it's very infectious working with some of these aspiring entrepreneurs. Can you also talk about like some of the experience that you've had working directly with women tech entrepreneurs, and how that's been an inspiring thing for you, and like focusing on women entrepreneurship in the country?
It's been both inspiring as well as eye-opening. And by eye-opening, I say that it's just kind of highlighted a lot of the different structural barriers and the different gender equalities that still exist in this ecosystem and in this space. And there isn't enough acknowledgement about it, and there isn't enough that's being done about it. There are, you know, ESOs, there are government initiatives, and people are getting there. But at the end of the day, I think it also leaves you helpless, along with feeling heavily inspired. I don't think one person can definitely change the entire ecosystem and the entire starting point for women entrepreneurs. But I mean, when you're around all these women who have taken it upon themselves to enter a space that's been predominantly occupied by men, you learn a lot from them. I mean, all the women I've met have been incredibly headstrong, and they have an immense amount of clarity in the direction in which they want to go to. And that's something that I'm trying to cultivate, and I'm trying to learn definitely from them as well. Sorry, that was a loaded answer.
That's okay. What have been some of the highlights for you? Can you talk us through like some exciting times that you've had with some of these women entrepreneurs?
Yeah. You know, there's, okay, well, one of our startups actually got funding, which was very exciting, but it doesn't overshadow, I think, the different types of community support that our ESO has been able to provide for these women, along with just friendship and general like internal mentorship that I see that happens. You know, all these members that have been there for longer than the newer ones are always willing to go in and help younger entrepreneurs. And it's a thing that happens just without any prompts on our part. So it's really nurturing and it's a very safe space. And it gives me a lot of hope. And I think it gives all of these other women hope as well, to kind of be surrounded by women who are also very encouraging and supportive.
How does it work for you being both Cambodian and also having that Western background whereby you've studied in Canada? Are you kind of in some regards acting as a bridge between some of these entrepreneurs and other communities?
I'm hesitant to say yes, because I don't know if I would appoint myself that role. I don't think that I'm in the position to do so, to say that I am the bridge between cultures. It definitely does play a role in the fact that my Khmer isn't as clear. I'm not very good with formal Khmer, but I speak Khmer with the women that I work with, and we get along in Khmer, and you know, like it's different to be a Khmer woman and getting along with other Khmer women, because it's nice. It's a lovely feeling. It's very community driven. But I don't think it plays as much of a role as I thought it would initially. I definitely thought that going into this, it would be a bit of a barrier for me. But you know, I grew up in Cambodia, and I think that played a large part in me being able to kind of just jump back into things.
And I think what's unique about your program is that it's an ongoing program. So it's more, like you said, it's more of a community. It doesn't have a start and an end. And so would you kind of say you kind of see yourself as, you know, as someone for these entrepreneurs to go to and just get like constant advice and help them work through some of the issues that they're dealing with their business? Is that how you'd sort of summarize your role?
Yeah, pretty much. And, you know, everything from business issues to personal problems to even stress management, it really differs and it depends on the day.
Yeah. Okay. No, I mean, I've witnessed how you work with them. And in comparison to some other incubators, you know, it really does seem like what you're doing is a pretty well-rounded form of support. Yeah.
I mean, it also has a lot to do with the fact that it's coming from a gendered lens. So support when you're not starting from the same point means that we can't really make it a time limit, because these women need support all round, all year long, because there isn't a season where they can actually, oh, look, I caught up with all the men. So it's playing the long game.
Okay, and touching on some of the milestones that you'd like to achieve over the coming years, how do you see that playing out? What are you aiming towards over the next few years within the space?
Me personally, or what I hope to see happen in the space?
Both would be great.
Me personally, I would really love to keep working in other ESOs as well, and to just learn as much as I can about all the different sectors that are coming in, and definitely broaden my knowledge when it comes to the different types of technical capacity we have nationwide, along with, you know, different innovations that I see popping up, like agri-tech is something I forgot to mention back there. It's something that I think has a lot of potential here in Cambodia as well. What I hope to see in the ecosystem as a whole I really, really, really am looking forward to seeing a lot more Khmer-driven ESOs and a lot more effort on the part of startups to support each other, which is what I think is ultimately going to happen.
How do you see it actually being innovated? Like, and maybe specifically on the concept of commercial incubation versus non-commercial incubation. So when an NGO is running an incubator, they aren't investing in startups, versus when a venture capital company is running an incubator, they will be investing in startups. And I just wondered how you see that developing.
I definitely see commercial incubators occupying the space a lot more than non-commercial incubators, just specifically because I know firsthand from all the entrepreneurs I work with that there is a strong hunger to participate in programs where they have direct access to those who provide capital versus having to go through a middleman like NGOs or, you know, other ESOs that don't particularly take them to the points that they need or give them the contacts that they would want. And also just generally speaking, moving forward, I think that a lot of startups are tired of going through programs and competing in competitions for small prizes because that takes up a lot of their time. Most of these startups, you know, the founders are doing full-time jobs as well as being in school because, you know, a lot of the entrepreneurs I've worked with are 19 plus. So there's definitely got to be a lot more innovation in that space, as well as a lot more open-mindedness in how we're going to go about it, because what we're doing right now is clearly not working.
Okay. And what do you think, like, what specifically do you think needs to have more focus? Like, I think in the past, it's been a lot about building a pitch deck, performing to an event, like a pitch event, and then, you know, maybe understanding quite massively maybe the impact of your business, but some other things maybe have been neglected, such as a focus on like business traction or financials or raising capital. That's my personal opinion, but I wondered if you think there's any specific areas of the incubation space that you think there needs to be a lot more attention.
To be honest with you, I think it depends on the sector. If you were to ask me what agri-tech startups need, I would say they need more infrastructure. I think that they need a lot more technical capacity nationwide in the country, and they need a lot more access to coders and people that understand robotics and IoT and can make apps run smoothly with the machinery. If you're going to ask me what e-commerce websites need, well, that's going to be an entirely different playing field because they've got to worry about the rest of the competition out there, right? But as a whole, what can the ESOs do to support these startups? For starters, I would say a prototyping facility would be great. I know that's something a lot of our members struggle with, especially when you're young and you're broke and you work with machinery. It's very difficult to scale up when you can't afford a space to develop your ideas and you don't have a mentor who can really cultivate and, you know, nurture you to the point where you need to be and push you. So it's everything that ESOs do provide and everything that I think, you know, educational facilities and just general infrastructure that, you know, really needs to be honed in on. And I know that doesn't answer your question, but it's an answer I don't know where to start at from, you know what I'm saying? Because there's so much that needs to be done right now that I can't really pick one.
Okay, yeah, no, I like that framing of it being, you know, sector by sector. And of course, the, you know, different risks are more evident based on what sector you're in. Like you said, like e-commerce, fintech, you know, massive competition risk, whereas like other sectors, a bit less explored. And personally, what have been some of the challenges that you've had to overcome when working in the incubation space?
Oof. I would definitely say that one of the main things that I approached when I entered the incubator space was solving everyone's problems, because that's what I thought I was there to do. And it is what I'm there to do, but you can't do that especially when you've got, for example, 30 startups that are all in different sectors, all come from completely different backgrounds and have different schedules and different needs and wants, which is very important to distinguish from, because they may need something, but then it may not want to show up to a mentorship session, and they may not want to show up to a training session. Because let's face it, everyone is busy, and I get that. So I think it's being flexible, along with being always, I think one of the reasons that I like the incubator space and why I've kind of adapted to it is because I've learned to keep my hand on the pulse, you know, as to say. The problems change every year. And, you know, especially given that we're in a pandemic that didn't hit us as hard until February 20th in 2021 this year, the problems are gonna look completely different in 6 months. So it's constant checkups, it's due diligence, and it's also just listening and making sure that you're doing everything within your power to try and address collective issues.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I completely agree. I mean, yeah, like Cambodia a year ago versus Cambodia now is a very different situation, especially in regards to the pandemic. So you've always got to be, as you say, keeping a pulse and adapting as everything evolves. So maybe just fast forwarding down the line a bit. What do you think incubation will look like in, you know, I don't know, like 2026, 2027 in Cambodia? Like how will it have changed significantly?
So I hope to see, and, you know, like based on a lot of the government initiatives that have come out now and the different types of support I've seen pop up, I really hope to see a lot more public infrastructure, educational facilities, and, you know, foreign capital flowing in. I think that's really going to change, you know, just the trajectory of what's going to happen in the next 2 years for a lot of ESOs and a lot of startups. Unfortunately, what's happening in Myanmar, like you said, Max, during one of our panel discussions, and along with Thailand, it's causing a lot of funding to come into Cambodia. And I think that's going to change the role that NGOs play in this ecosystem, along with how startups are going to choose to occupy it. Most of the entrepreneurs that I talked to, I think, last year, most of their answers based on where to find capital was competitions and applying for grants. I don't think that answer is going to be the same in 2 years, let alone 7.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I mean, even just your point on Myanmar, like I'm seeing more and more people coming from Myanmar looking to do work in Cambodia now in the investment space. And yeah, I mean, just in the last few years, or you've seen a lot more activity. But as Dom and I, whenever we talk to people, it's still very much the first wave. So definitely still the first wave of activity. But yeah, I agree. And just diving into the point about like bringing capital into the country, what do you think are like some of the biggest misconceptions investors have about Cambodia that you think need to be overturned before you can see a steady flow of capital coming in, like let's say what happened in and is happening in Vietnam?
That's a multifaceted question with a lot of different answers, but I would say one of the main ones for it might also be just general investor awareness here in Cambodia itself. There's a very big culture and, you know, general understanding of investment as buying land and buying property. This also, you know, limits a lot of entrepreneurs and their ability to access funding from Cambodian investors. I think that once national investors start investing in other national businesses, and we start to see a lot more community support, I think that's probably going to attract a lot of people, because you're not going to want to go somewhere that even, you know, like for example, I'm not going to want to come to Cambodia if I don't see anyone who's Cambodian investing in other Cambodian companies.
Yeah, this is something that Dom and I have touched on with a lot of the guests. And I think there are some examples popping up. Like I'd say Ritty Tour is a great example of someone that has been an entrepreneur himself and then started investing and supporting the ecosystem. I think the same with Chai Sila as well. So I completely agree. Then the national investment needs to happen as well before foreign investment. And just final question from me. What do you think? Like you've worked with a lot of aspiring entrepreneurs. Like what would you identify as the number one sort of characteristic or skill that you can identify in a successful founder?
I would give you three things that really mark someone out as, I know that they're going to be okay and that they don't need me as much. But I would say it's the first characteristic would be a jack of all trades, a founder who is able to execute more than a few roles and more than a few jobs within their business is someone who's going to be fine, is someone who's going to be able to adapt quickly, and someone who's going to be able to take over if any hits come their way. Second characteristic I would say is definitely resiliency. And the third is resourcefulness. Cambodia has a lot of resources when it comes to money, when it comes to infrastructure, to a certain extent. But the most successful founders I've talked to and I've known and I've seen have been those who've been able to tap into their own contacts, who've been able to create contacts out of nothing and find what they needed despite all the barriers that were in their way, because they just had a general deep sense and belief in themselves and knowing that they could make it happen.
Well, thank you, Jasmine. And as we transition into the next section of our conversation, focusing on the market challenges and opportunities within Cambodia, maybe even bridging the gap to the question you just answered when speaking about the key characteristics and skills of successful founders, what would you say are some of the opportunities in Cambodia for startups to grow massively?
I mean, I think that there's a lot of space for startups to occupy the ESOs. And that was something I mentioned earlier. And I still think that I've seen a lot of different models around the world of ESOs that have kind of started off as nonprofits and then eventually moved into something more commercial because they were taken over by those that were, I guess, benefiting from it. I also see a lot more community effort and I think a local effort to support Khmer businesses. I think there's a big hunger here to support Khmer businesses. And on that sense, I think that there's gonna be a few champions that rise up in the next few years that are gonna change the entire trajectory of the Khmer ecosystem. I 100% believe that. It might be someone like Ritty Tool, like Max just mentioned, or Chi Sila, but there's gonna be a few people that are gonna be able to pave the way and kind of set the tone for the next few years. So I don't think we'll know until that happens.
But that's the exciting part, right? We'll continue to see that development and continue to see these players that are starting to really shine within the space. And I guess to continue bridging that gap as well, can you describe maybe the overall attitude or culture towards entrepreneurship in Cambodia?
It's a bit of a difficult one to pinpoint because it depends on the privilege of the person. It depends on the background. It depends on what their parents did for a living. And it also depends on, you know, like the general culture that their families hold individually. I think each family in Cambodia, family is a very, very big part of our lives. And generally, you know, my cousins, my aunts, my uncles, when they were growing up and before they went to school, they had talks about their careers with the family before getting approval. They had to get approval before they actually went in down certain career paths or, you know, decided to do certain things in school. I think that hasn't changed as much with my family and from a lot of the families I've observed and I've known personally, along with my entrepreneurs that I've met. But I think it's starting to change. I think that one of the main good things that ESOs have provided in Cambodia is a general awareness and, I guess, credibility behind the idea of entrepreneurship. You know, if your kid comes home with a cash prize out of nowhere just because they went into a startup competition, it's going to make you more likely to let them go down that path. So I really hope that there's a general understanding of what entrepreneurship is, besides just the general social norm of struggle behind it. And I think that soon, not even soon actually, probably in a few years, there's gonna be a bit of a shift in what we've been seeing in schools and in universities and a lot of the demographics in the startup scene.
That was actually gonna be my follow-up question in around how universities or other educational practices have been kind of cultivating this entrepreneurship space, especially in the younger generation. Is that something that you've seen starting to take shape?
Yeah, so most of the entrepreneurs that I've met, just because our age are, like, most of our entrepreneurs that we work with are between 18 to 25. And a lot of them started off just joining a random high school competition, and that's how their startup founded, and that's how their startup team was formed, and they stuck to it, you know, with it till today. And I've seen a lot of different government initiatives like NIPTICT, which is now CADT. They have a lot of very gender-driven educational efforts that are really integral in moving forward Cambodia. And there's a lot of different educational institutions that have been teaming up with NGOs, with different governments, and, you know, even some private VC firms to provide the different types of education that they need based on, you know, the different demographics that they have. So I hope that we'll see a lot more government infrastructure for universities. And I hope that there's a little more collaboration on that front between NGOs and educational facilities, because I do think that there's a major gap there.
I think the idea of having high school competitions is very exciting, especially for the younger generation to know that, you know, as you graduate from that schooling system there and thinking about what would be the next step, whether to go to university or to start your own business or something along those lines, it's an opportunity that's there, and to continue to have that support and that ecosystem of that ecosystem of support is very exciting, especially as it's developing too. What would you say is the number one challenge for startups in Cambodia at this time? There's definitely plenty that I'm sure you can think about, but what is maybe one that you've seen consistently with the companies that you support in your cohort, or just in general for the ecosystem?
Well, I mean, it's a global curse, really. It's cash flow, right? And I think it's increasingly hard here in Cambodia, especially when face-to-face contact can't happen. And the e-commerce startups and the ones that are based online can adapt. But the ones that, for example, you know, like, we have a few startups that do videography and that do photography and digital solutions. Regardless of the fact that they do, you know, quote unquote digital solutions, they still require in-person meetings, and they still require actually being there to film a person. So when there's more barriers like this, it's interesting to see how the startups can adapt. And I wouldn't say the pandemic has been the number one challenge, but besides cash flow, I would also say that there's just a general disconnect between all the players in the ecosystem. And that really reflects itself in the startups, unfortunately, because, you know, ESOs aren't talking to the government. The government's not talking to VC firms, and no one's talking to the startups and connecting them to the different types of data, information, and, you know, contacts that they need.
You Yeah, it's and I guess when you think about maybe some of the other organizations that are being created, I mean, for quite recently, even with Khmer Enterprise, it feels like there is a push as well for trying to create this linkage between the different parts of the ecosystem. So hopefully, you know, as those things start to develop, it'll be exciting to see what can be developed just within the entrepreneurship space. And also just to continue on with the pandemic, as you just mentioned, how have you seen startups adapting to the current situation over the last year? There's probably a lot of things that you can touch on, but if you can maybe think of a couple that are quite significant, that would be great to share.
Yeah, so I've actually watched quite a few startups completely dissolve their initial idea and start something new amidst the pandemic just because they had to adapt and keep it moving. And that's been the main thing that I'm just constantly awestruck by, because it's an overnight thing, right? Along with that, I would say I've definitely seen a lot come up in the edutech space. There's been a lot of business for a lot of the educational platforms. I know people have spare time, so the startups that have honed in on that have specifically come out of this pandemic and will come out of this pandemic in a significantly better position than they were entering it. And it doesn't have to be just e-commerce platforms or educational platforms. I've seen, you know, even agri-tech startups pump out different types of content just because they wanted to play around and see how many different audiences they could target. And this is the perfect time to do it if you can. So that's going to be something that I'm looking forward to seeing, is how much progress all of them have made coming out of this, because I know that they haven't just been sitting and waiting for it to end. They've been learning.
And thinking about just the different sectors within Cambodia, especially in recent developments of maybe the educational tech space and e-health, where have you seen most of the new startup activity personally?
Oof. So I would say most of the startup activity has definitely been in the predictable ones, like, you know, e-commerce platforms, educational platforms. There's a lot more agri-tech popping up recently, which is very exciting for me, because I think that, you know, given how agrarian our economy is, there's a lot of potential to tap in on that. And there's just been, I don't know, like, it's mostly e-commerce, agri-tech, and you know, educational platforms, but I'm hoping to see a few more startups in the deep tech space, because they've been flirting with it back and forth, and we keep seeing some hints and some flashes, but I'm waiting for the pioneers to come in, and I've hoped that they will soon.
And within that, is there a sector that you feel that is maybe particularly underdeveloped or overlooked, in your opinion?
Definitely. When I was a journalist in 2019, I did an article about how medical bills were the lead cause of debt in Cambodia. And researchers actually called it the medical poverty trap. 60% of those surveyed by ADB, and I think it was Organization of Cooperation and Development, actually found that, you know, 64% that they surveyed used private facilities over public ones, which amasses into a large amount of debt. And because there isn't as many loaning institutions here, that often leads to long-term interest rates and, you know, loss of assets. So there's a lot of lack of awareness in the medical space, along with lack of credibility and a lot of different processes and procedures that aren't talked about in full clarity that they should be. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how people will provide the credibility and will provide the awareness that the general public is really needing right now when it comes to medical institutions, especially given that we're in a pandemic.
Yeah, it's interesting to see what will come from kind of like this next wave of startups, especially like as you just had mentioned from as a result of the pandemic. Now, as we transition into the next stage of our conversation, it would be great to learn a little bit more about you, Jasmine, and maybe some of the habits and advice that you've instilled or received throughout your life so far. And I think a great place to start off would be, what are some of the habits that you install in yourself to stay self-accountable or motivated on a day-to-day basis?
This one's kind of nerdy. I got it from a Russell Brand YouTube video. and it's discipline is faith in action. And it does play true. I think discipline is the main ingredient to success. And it's something that I hold in very high regard and I like to hold myself to very strictly, because every day you waste keeps you farther away from the goal you want to be in. So you have to be consistent.
And as you focus on staying diligent and consistent, what would you say are some of the ways that you handle adversity or doubt as well? Definitely would be, yeah.
That's a good question, because I don't think I handle it very well. We're being completely honest. I think I'm still trying to figure it out, if I'm being completely honest with you, Dom, but it's not working.
Yeah, just, I guess, sit down, maybe have some tea and...
Yeah, so, like, it depends on the day. Sometimes it's wine, sometimes it's tea.
Yeah. Yeah, either way, just finding a way to relax from what it sounds like.
Yeah.
So maybe just thinking about some maybe specific literatures, and especially being a journalist too, what is maybe a formative book that you've read in your past that has really influenced the way that you maybe approach life or from a business sense?
So a book that really changed me and changed my life was The Warrior Heritage. It's by Siang Lim Bit, who is a Khmer psychologist, and it's a psychological perspective of Cambodian trauma. And it was the first book I'd ever read that summed up everything I had watched my families go through, just, you know, internally and, you know, self-struggles and things that I had found that I had adapted myself just through generational trauma. And it was an important thing for me to read as a young adult, just so I could understand where I come from and, you know, just to cut off generational curses and generational trauma, because it all starts with you and what you decide to pass on to the next generation.
From there, and obviously it's a very very influential book, and I'm sure there are many people that you've encountered in your life as well that have been influential or have provided some sort of guidance to you. And this is kind of our traditional closing question that we like to ask, but what would you say is the most important advice that you've ever been given?
Dude, all my advice just sounds like it's from a boomer, but it actually works. I promise. I think the most important thing that anyone's ever told me, and it was from my father, and he said, if you're going to do something, do it right the first time. And, you know, it's true. If you do something right the first time and you make sure you take care and you pay attention to details, then everything you, all your work and everything you put out will directly reflect your intentions and directly reflect the quality that you're able to give. And I think that's something that's very lacking, just personally, from personal experience, you know, work, school, life. I think people aren't as intentional as they should be, especially when it comes to work. You know, it may not be your dream, it may not be the position you want to hold right now, but if you execute it well and you carry yourself with pride, it's going to produce something that is going to make you happy, and it's going to produce something that really reflects your worth.
Couldn't agree more, especially thinking about when you combine work and maybe delayed gratification in terms of what it, is the outcome from it. I mean, a lot of times, I mean, thinking from maybe a startup's perspective too, you can't necessarily see the output of success at the very early stages. But knowing that if you keep this focus and this dedication and kind of like you had mentioned, you know, this focus, it's you can eventually see the outcomes as they come through. And it's very exciting to know that you can be rewarded for what it is that you put in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny. Most of the startups I've known quite a few that entered with one idea and, you know, dissolved it and restarted just immediately. And it just happens all the time because I think it's an addictive thing, right? You start a business and then you have all the flexibility and all the creative power you want. And that's important, especially for young people who are determined and driven. So I'm always seeing the same entrepreneurs come back with something new, and it's something I really look forward to. And, you know, it also inspires me.
Right. And pivoting is such a key aspect too, especially for any sort of founder or entrepreneur in general too. It's, you know, these people have very creative ideas, and to consistently see, you know, output of products or services that come out that ultimately be beneficial to a large, you know, group of people, it's very exciting to see that.
Yeah, you're right about the not missing a beat part. You guys probably, have you interviewed a lot of startup founders?
We've had a pretty good spread of between investors, entrepreneurs that are founders, and then those that have been working within startups that are key operators at the company. Yeah.
But, you know, even I know you guys interviewed Ricky and, you know, Chisila. They're even perfect examples of it, you know, jacks of all trades, hand in every different sector and pot that they're interested in, and they do it well. And they execute it, you know, with the focus of a deadly assassin. And it's a quality that I see in 19-year-olds in Cambodia with startups. And it's something that I'm trying to cultivate because, you know, even just looking at it, like I'd mentioned earlier, it's infectious. You want to be that way.
Right. Kind of that Swiss Army knife mentality. It's that you can bring so many different skills or traits to the table that can be beneficial in a multifaceted way. And it's very exciting to see that. Well, Jasmine, thank you so much for coming on to the show today. Max and I really appreciate your time. And this was a fantastic conversation. We learned so much about the incubation space and in Cambodia, as well as really appreciate all of your perspectives on the outlook of Cambodia as well. So thank you again.